Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Governor J.B. Pritzker this week began touring the state singing the praises of Illinois' more than $50 billion budget. He's most proud of the increase in education funding. But Republican lawmakers aren't proud of the fiscal 2024 spending plan. In fact, they probably have a pretty dim view of much of what's going on in the state capitol these days. Well, this weekend, we're going to get the view from the GOP side of the aisle with one of the folks they call the Four Tops. Hello, I'm political editor Craig Delamore, and this is At Issue. My guest this weekend is one of Illinois' top lawmakers, House Republican leader Toni Maccombi. She is the first female GOP leader in the history of the General Assembly. The state Senate broke that barrier years ago. She represents the sprawling 89th District in western Illinois along the Mississippi. Her hometown is Savannah, where she was also the mayor for a time. She defeated an incumbent to win her House seat, and she ascended to the post of House Minority Leader after her predecessor, Jim Durkin, decided not to seek another term in that position after the difficult 2022 elections. It seems to be a modern political tradition these days when things get really tough, turn things over to a woman to fix it. Leader Maccombi, welcome.
Well, I don't disagree with that statement, Craig, at all, but I'm not sure that Leader Durkin would agree with you.
Well, no, Leader Durkin and I are old buddies. He's been on this program many times, he's a good guy and did a lot of really good stuff, and that was just a really awful year.
Absolutely. We miss him, and kind of mad at him that he didn't come visit us this year, but we'll hopefully get him next year.
Let's start with the state budget. According to House Speaker Chris Welch's office, the budget builds on the series of credit rating upgrades Illinois has gotten and allocates an additional $200 million in pension payments. There are hundreds of millions more in education funding. There's $20 million for an initiative to expand grocery access to underserved rural towns and urban neighborhoods, in case anyone thought that food deserts were just an inner city problem. So, Leader Maccombi, what's not to like?
Well, the budget is the most important thing that we do vote on every year. And I hope that there is a budget presented at some point that we as the House Republicans can vote on, and not just pick and choose a couple of us, but to vote on as a caucus as a whole. This year, a combination of things. There are some good things in a budget. There's good things in every budget, because if we didn't have a budget, we wouldn't be funding education, pensions, our most vulnerable, healthcare. But there's things in it that we are unsure of. One of the, you mentioned at the beginning in your entry, your opening about Governor Pritzker's education funding. Everybody can support that, right? The concern I have and our caucus has, and I brought forward to the governor, with his Smart Start program, which is $250 million this year. A question I brought up during the debate was, what is it going to cost on the on year two, year three, year four? How are we going to make this new program sustainable with the unknowns of our revenues? So, for example, the budget that was presented gives about $100 million play from the difference of the revenue estimate of 50 billion, like 50.7 billion. And I think the spend is roughly 50.6 billion, right around there. And that gives us 100 million cushion, but we have an unknown with revenues, with recession. We already know revenues have been down. We don't know what there was no April surprise this year. Both the governor's budget folks and others are concerned about the unknowns of the recession and where that's going to go. But we have an AFSCME contract that's not accounted for that could run anywhere from 200 to 300 million. So right away, we're in the hole there. We have concern with the undocumented immigrant cost under Medicaid. So when that was originally estimated, when this was expanded last General Assembly, I believe the estimate, don't quote me, Craig, but I think it was $280 million was the estimate. And we are discovering through HFS that it's actually $1.1 billion. Well, that was kind of a political football as you watched at the end of session, because nobody wanted to hold anybody accountable for that error and also for that growing population with us being a sanctuary state, with that growing population, that growing cost that is unmatched with the federal government. So strictly our bill to pay. And what ended up happening, because the way the bill was drafted is that it was a may, not a shall, but there again, it's a program that has been started. So how do you all of a sudden stop it without causing potential harm? So again, the legislators put it on the governor through emergency rules. He's gonna have to figure out this problem. And that could be a combination of premiums, which is not wanted by some of the members of the Dem caucus. That could be deductibles, that could be going through a managed care. There's certainly ways, but that being said, there's still that piece from age 19 to I believe 45 that is requested to be expanded. The Republican caucus has asked for, and I believe it's Leader Ryan Spain is carrying these bills, is that we do an audit and we do have a moratorium on any expansion of the program until we really know what's going on. There was also a raise in the budget that we believe was unconstitutional, a raise for legislators, which blows my mind, Craig. Think about this. Here we are, people are suffering all around the state and they write in that we as legislators get a 5.5% increase. And constitutionally, we're not supposed to get any sort of increase, cost of living increase to exceed 5%. So, that is going to be something that has to be remedied. Also, just the lack of the hospitals, we had expected, and they had expected, a 20% increase. They haven't seen an increase of their rates for 28 years, I believe. And so they were given 10%, but technically, it doesn't start until January. So this year, it's really only 5%. So the next year, FY25, we'll have to deal with a full 10% when revenues could be down, and they're still 10% short. There's also $150 million of new projects. Some of your listeners would better equate those to pork projects. These are projects that legislators, reach out to their legislative districts and ask for shovel-ready projects These are projects that oftentimes don't even get funded for years. So back in 2019, we received member initiative dollars, and that was spread around the House and the Senate, Republicans and Democrats. And we in the House Republicans in 2019 received $111 million to spread between, I think, 50 some legislative districts. There's still an outstanding amount of $41.8 million that is certainly a concern. Democrats also have old projects from 2019 that are yet to be funded. So why put on more new projects when we haven't even fulfilled old promises? So those are just a few of the concerns that we found in there. And it really is about priorities and promises that we make. And it's really important. We're told from day one, our word is our bond. We take an oath. I don't believe that the intent of the majority of the House and the Senate have an intent to hurt, but sometimes our decisions made there do just that. And this budget will hurt some and it will help some.
Where do you think the pain is going to come? Where are people going to feel this in their, either in their wallets or in the services that they get or don't get?
I think the pain in the wallet will come in the future, whether it's FY25 or 26 with a tax increase. But definitely if our population continues to decrease, so if our tax base continues to decrease in Illinois, there's nothing to be done but raise the tax rate, right? So I think that piece will come in the future. Now, that being said, there are some increases in fees throughout the budget that some will feel here and there, but nothing drastic per se. I think with some fees through the Secretary of State, obviously the gas tax again goes up July 1. We're all experiencing that. Especially where I live, and you can go across the river and get gas anywhere from 30 to 50 cents cheaper. People are willing to just cross a bridge to do that. So I would say that the tax piece of it, changing tax, like whether it's an increase in the income tax, increase in the sales tax, increase change completely. The other side of the aisle is still not afraid of that graduated income tax. Even though our neighbors all around us are going from a graduated to a flat tax to make it, that is the only tax that we have that's really not regressive at all. But services definitely, I think, will have an issue. Another big concern when you are outspending your revenues, we have, Comptroller has built and has pushed extremely hard for this rainy day fund. And that has helped with our increase of our credit ratings. And I'm afraid that she will not have the power to protect that rainy day fund for true disastrous spending. It will be used to backfill a budget, and that's not what it's meant for. So I'm very concerned that that can happen. We as the House Republicans were very careful to show our hand of what we wanted in the budget, because it was told, you let us know what you want in the budget. And it could be, for example, I said, will the $41.8 million for the past promise of 2019 be in this budget? And the response was, well, how many Republican votes are you going to put on it? And I was like, this is a past promise from 2019 when 20 Republicans made a deal to for a capital bill and voted 20 Republicans voted, and some of them are gone because of that vote that they took to help build up their districts. That vote's already been taken. So it was real disingenuous to say that we were going to have to put more votes, especially when it was said, we want your leadership team to be voting. My response was, well, you'll be having a different leadership team if we vote on a budget on a cost that was already a past promise. So we were very careful, but we were not afraid at all to talk about our shared priorities between Republicans and Democrats. And that included a past promise of the repeal of the franchise tax, which, thanks to the governor, that was put in the start of it. It's very delayed, but it's a start. And you're going to see that now in the start of the repeal of that. And I hope that continues. That was an initiative from Leader Marin back in 2019 and part of that deal. The estate tax is a shared priority. It was not any reform to the estate tax was not put into the budget, but I believe a shared priority that we may see in the future. I consider a win that we were given the opportunity to have a subject matter hearing on that topic. So that's a start. So hopefully we can see that in the FY25-26 budget. Another shared priority was the expansion or the extension of the R&D, the research and development tax credit. And that was taken by the lead of Representative Sosnowski. Certainly hope for that extension. I would say the most popular in the press, the Invest in Kids program was another shared priority, which unfortunately, education is a priority of the governor. There again, he left the legislature to decide whether or not we extend that sunset. We were very careful to get involved with that because the advocates were working behind the scenes to negotiate that. And the moment Republicans came forward and started fighting for that, that's when we knew it wasn't going to be in the budget. So we have to be very careful when there's important issues. When there's only 40 out of 118 of us, we have to be very careful not to hurt the people that we represent. So those were some things that we pushed for, but were hesitant to talk about things like energy cost tax credit and then some public safety changes. And one of the things that is most abhorrent probably out of this session is the lack of ethics reform. Such an obvious year, right?
Well, and look, we'll talk a little bit more about that and the balance of power. You are listening to WBBM News Radio's At Issue. I'm Craig Delamore. My guest is Illinois House Republican Leader Tony McCombie. And let's talk about that because you mentioned 40 Republicans out of 118. It has been called a super minority because your votes aren't needed to pass anything or even to withstand a veto. Is that not just part of the landscape that the fact that they're talking to you at all is, you know, maybe some, did you expect that they were going to be more cooperative and open than they were?
Well, I entered this position as the leader. I have been a state rep for 6 years. Speaker Welch and I were reps together, politically disagreed, but able to have conversations for the 4 years we served together in that capacity. We're able to compromise on some issues, mandates for education mandates. We were able to, you know, compromise on some of those things, able to have lively, respectful debates on the floor. Craig, I did go into this as the new Republican leader, even with 40 Republicans out of 118 in the House. which is a combination of, I would say, many things, but probably the most prevalent was the remap. The remap was not a fair and transparent process, in our opinion. It was, as it always has been, done by drawn and determined by the majority party. And I know there are states that have Republican majorities and probably are facing this same concern, but it is our belief as the Republican caucus that it should be an independent map. This map was drawn for 77 Democrats. They have 78, but that didn't deter me, because the 40 representatives that we have, we represent parts of all 102 counties. The Democrats do not. The Democrats cannot say that, not even close. So yeah, I did naively believe that they would choose to include us in conversation. And I will be honest, we did have good conversations with some of our colleagues across the aisle on several issues. Speaker Welch and I met, and we agreed to do this every week while we were in session. We missed the 2 weeks of spring break. 1 week, we just couldn't make it happen. And unfortunately, the final week of session, probably the most important week. A lot of those conversations were not necessarily substantive, but me advocating to have a bill come forward out of committee or go to committee, and you know, real general information, always asking, especially starting in April, when are we going to talk about a budget? When are we going to talk about a budget? Because remember, Craig, we have the framework from the governor in February. So the governor writes the budget and then gives it to us to enhance or destroy, right? And then he has to ultimately agree to sign it. So we had that framework. The two budgeteers had had a couple texts about getting together. It never came to fruition. And then finally, the Monday before the final week is really when it kind of came crashing around the reality, came crashing to me saying, we are not going to be at the table. And I was very disappointed. But continued. And when I was leaving, he said, I know you're very disappointed in this process and in me. Just be patient. We're getting there.
And I want to be, before we do run short on time, I want to ask about ethics, because if anything, I mean, the entire upheaval in the House has been over ethics. What is your disappointment, or where do we go from here? When are we going to get substantive ethics legislation?
Well, I think the ethics issue is also our ethical behavior, even just with one another. And ethics to me is about even how we deal with one another on a budget or an ethics or an education or any big topic. We need to be transparent. We need to be open and we need to be clear. With nothing being done again with ethics, and the ethics reform that was done was not sufficient, to the point even that the legislative inspector general resigned her position, kind of tells you that it was written poorly. The revisions to the economic interest statement, and a lot of people that are probably listening to your show understand that they are no longer sitting on a non-for-profit board, or because the economic interest statement became very cumbersome. But for us not to address just simple things like legislators being lobbyists, it's crazy to think that I could be the mayor of my hometown, I could be a state representative, and I could be a paid lobbyist from my hometown all at the same time. Now, if anybody thinks that that's ethical, that's an issue. We believe in halting the revolving door. We believe, obviously, in ending pay-to-play politics. The public service should certainly be over self-interest. And one of the most important things is empowering the legislative inspector general to have subpoena powers so that the office can perform thorough corruption investigations. These are very, very simple things that we can do. They also need some cleanup language done on when and where and how we can fundraise. That's unclear. So there's some things that I hope they're going to be discussing over the summer.
And you mentioned things like fundraising and such. How do you, under the circumstances, build up the Republican ranks? And lest you have another disastrous election and have to, you know, decide your future, what can Republicans in the legislature do to strengthen their position?
Well, we need more than 40. We need some more butts in seats, Craig, is what we need. And you know, that's how do you get folks excited? You know, so I have many Republican friends in Chicago, and they're like, we don't vote because it doesn't matter here. Our voice is crowded out. And my head literally wants to blow off because, you know, per capita, there's a ton of Republicans or independents that are going to vote for Republicans that are not voting because they feel their voice doesn't matter. Well, their voice matters in the rest of the state for sure. So it's extremely important for me and our caucus to, get people to the polls and realize the importance of that. Maybe not in some cases directly in their own backyard in bigger urban areas. Small communities certainly understand it because we have mayors that lose by one or two or five seats. But even in House seats, I think Tom Morrison lost by 37 votes. We have some really close races, you know, so it's extremely important that every single person votes. That's one. So how do we engage people to get involved in the process and have them know their voice matters? The other thing that's really important for me, our leadership team and our caucus is to help people understand and get rid of the negative preconceived notions of what a Republican is. So that's extremely important. It's very simple for me. I remember walking a door and somebody had stated, you know, I'm a Republican because I believe in the Second Amendment. And I thought that was so silly because I know a ton of people who are crazy Second Amendment supporters that are Democrats.
It's more of a geographic divide than it is party. Am I not right?
Well, I don't even know if it's that, Craig, because we have so many folks in Chicago, and I would say single women or single mothers that have gotten their FOID card and their CCL. So certainly believe in the Second Amendment for their self-protection. They may not believe in the type of firearm that we're able to own, but they certainly believe in the core value of the Second Amendment. I think that's across the board. But I think that, so the get rid of the preconceived, because when that person said that to me, I was like, oh, and she's like, well, why are you a Republican? I go, well, I believe in less government. And that's really the big piece for me. I don't want to carry folks on the government's toll from cradle to death. I want to help people lift them up so they can carry themselves. So that's to me the big difference. And the social issues we can talk about, and we could talk about all day long, but we need to work better at that and have those conversations. And that's one thing that I'm doing around the state.
Well, that's going to have to be the final word. This has been a great conversation, and it better not be our last. We will definitely do this periodically, I hope. But
I hope so. I appreciate you taking the time.
We appreciate you giving us the time. That is House GOP leader Tony McCombie. For our listeners, if you would like a copy of this program or just to hear it again, please visit our website. That is WBBMNewsRadio.com. There's a link on the homepage. You can also find our podcasts on Odyssey.com. We'll be back next week with another edition of At Issue, and I hope you'll be listening. Until then, I'm Craig Delamore, News Radio 105.9 WBBM.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Baseball is in full swing. NBA playoffs are heating up, and your NFL team is gearing up for training camp. Listen to the latest on the teams you love here on the Odyssey app. The biggest sports radio stations in the country, providing unrivaled local coverage of their teams, all in one place. Exclusive interviews with players, coaches, and team executives, streaming live and always available on demand. Stay in the know with your favorite teams right here on the Odyssey app.